helicopter sets down in the shadow of Mount Ogilvy near the Alaska-British Columbia border. It lands on the snow behind a nunatak, a precarious outcropping of rock about 5,600 feet high, surrounded by a plummeting glacier and partially obscured by rapidly moving clouds. A collection of wood and metal shacks are built on the bedrock of the nunatak, resembling an isolated ramshackle mountain monastery. This is Camp 18, headquarters for other smaller stations scattered around the area.
Well, we're sending our surveyors down to Camp 10 right away, just because we don't think they can get weather turning sour, and you may be stuck in here.
Out to greet passengers from the helicopter is a fellow in his 70s, his face showing decades of wind and sun at high altitudes. Dr. Maynard Miller is with the University of Idaho, and he runs the Juno Icefield Research Project. Spread out among 5,000 square miles, the ice field is essentially a gigantic slab that originates in British Columbia and moves slowly around the highest peaks and down into the hills above Juno, ending with rugged glaciers like the Eagle, the Herbert, Mendenhall, and the Taku. The weather systems of the moist North Pacific and the cold, dry Arctic converge here. Sensitive to changes in climate, the ice field has attracted specialists in meteorology, Arctic ecology, and geology for the last 54 years. Miller has been with the project almost since it was started by the Office of Naval Research.
Let's not kid ourselves, there was the very important aspect of a military deterrent. And the Soviets knew that, and if we were able to surface at the North Pole and launch missiles, it was a lot better than launching them out of Nebraska or somewhere like that. And the fact was that when Sputnik came in on the scene in 1957 and 58, the Arctic suddenly was de-emphasized as the strategic north, because prior to that, there was a very good opportunity for us to be involved in a war with the Soviets across the Arctic Ocean and across the Arctic Islands.
Shifting priorities and funding sources eventually put the program under the direction of the University of Idaho, with support from groups like the National Science Foundation and NASA.
Bye-bye.
Miller and other faculty members pile into a group of snow tractors and head up onto the ice field for a seismic survey of a nearby glacier. After an hour's ride, the partly sunny skies turn into a thick white fog. The sky, horizon, and snow all blend together into a dense whiteout. It's a pilot's nightmare, no shadows and no indication of direction. Your eyes play tricks, seeing things moving in the distance that aren't really there.
Absolutely breathless. This fog is impenetrable. This is almost the ultimate in whiteout. And when not darkness comes on, it's really bad. You just can't see. You just have to bivouac, which we did the other night over at our last seismic profile.
Emerging from the fog are dozens of students following on cross-country skis.
You tie that to stake?
They will help with today's seismic survey.
I'll do my best.
The Juno ice field frequently attracts scientists from around the world, but it's also a training ground for the very best young scientists of tomorrow. As many as 30 students from all over the country come here for a six-week experience. It's one of the few programs that combines hands-on training with real research. Many students base their studies or theses on their work on the Juno ice field.
All right, send in reinforcements if I don't come back.
One of the students rolls out a reel of cable and disappears into the fog. Following behind is Catherine Burney from Williams College in Massachusetts, trudging through the snow and every several dozen yards, attaching sound and pressure sensors called geophones to the cable. Burney is actually a biology major with an interest in alpine vegetation. Everyone pitches in here.
It's been a fascinating summer. It's been neat to have a chance to live in this kind of a landscape for 2 months. It's a very unusual, beautiful place, and to have the chance to live and walk on the glacier every day for 2 months is pretty neat. I also learned quite a bit.
In the center of the line of geophones is a seismograph operated by Miller and Ken Spranke, professor of geophysics at the University of Idaho.
Everybody has to stay real still during the shot. No talking, no getting excited after the blast goes off.
And no shuffling feet.
The geophones are set.
Center west, we're ready for the real thing.
A few hundred yards away, students have put together a package of high explosives buried in the snow.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, blast.
The explosives are set off, sending up hundreds of snowballs which shower the students and perfectly target a microphone of a visiting TV crew.
We lost one.
Randy.
One man down.
The blast sends sound and pressure waves through the ice, bouncing off the bedrock at the bottom, back to the geophones, and then to the seismograph, all within a fraction of a second.
That's great. There is the pressure wave. That's the reflection off the bed right there. Beautiful. It's the air wave, ground wave. That's as fine as they come.
Early measurements were based on surveying flags and theodolites. Now, global positioning satellite receivers and laptop computers are used to track glaciers as they move as much as 3 feet a day. Scott McGee, a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service employee who always spends his summer vacation with Miller, says the ice surface has also dropped 3 feet a year, a consequence of less winter snow and more summer rain, which promote more melting. McGee also says a 90-year climate cycle should be ending now with a cooling period.
But, you know, with global warming, who knows? That may not occur this time. So the short-term trend since 93, anyway, has been less accumulation, less retained accumulation up here, So, which means that the surface is getting lower. You know, the glaciers are getting thinner. And if the glaciers up here are getting thinner, and there's more melting going on down below, then that just means that the glaciers are going to, you know, if it continues for I don't know how many years, but eventually the glaciers would disappear. It'd take a long time, granted, because Utaku's so thick.
Maritime air systems are also encroaching further inland, and freezing levels are going up. Details and very fine measurements may form the basis of their research, but Miller says they encourage senior scientists and students alike to discard their notebooks for a few moments each day and spend some time by themselves at a nearby summit. Simply soak in their sublime surroundings and contemplate the process of creation.
Along with feeling very humble and very small and insignificant, you look out around the high landscape everywhere and the beauty of it, and you can't help but saying, well, this is really rather fascinating because I'm the only person who's ever had this experience right here, and it's almost as if I own what I'm looking at because I am it alone in this universe of this hostile environment and this beauty. So, along as with feeling very humble and minute and inconsequential, you feel very powerful in the sense of that beauty and that appreciation.
Dr. Maynard Miller of the Juno Ice Field Research Project, students and scientists will remain on the ice until late August. Reporting in Juno, I'm Matt Miller.